Joining me now is Carla Hess from Rudy Greens. How are you, Carla?
I'm wonderful, Robert. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, we're happy to have you here and learn more about Rudy Greens. And as I understand, Rudy Green was the name of your dog. Tell us the story of Rudy Green, if you will.
Rudy Green, yes, was a dog of mine, and he was an exceptional dog. I've had many dogs, fosters, foster failures, and keepers, but Rudy Green was a purebred chocolate lab who showed up at my door back in the early 1992, 93, and he had a tag, he had a collar, but he was very scroungy, you know, kind of flea dermatitis and, you know, dull coat, wasn't well cared for. But he had a tag, so I called my local animal control, and at that time I was doing television commercials and working with them closely, and they knew me, and I said, okay, well, here's his tag number, and they said, okay, Carla, and they get back on the phone, and they said, well, this is Rudy Green, and he belongs to Janet and Tom Green, and they gave me their phone number, so I proceeded to call the Greens for over 3 days and left countless messages. And finally they called me back, and this was in Naples, Florida, and I lived in a part of the town that was very, it was still filled with old Florida fishermen. It was still like a fishing village at that time. And Mr. Green calls me and he says, well, he says, ever since Janet and the kids moved into the trailer, Rudy roams, and he's got papers. You can have him if you want him. So I said, well, Mr. Green, I said, I've found homes for a lot of mangy mutts. I can certainly find this purebred chocolate lab a home. So I took Rudy, and for a couple weeks, I cleaned him up, made sure he was housebroken, leash trained, good with cats and kids and other dogs, and he was just a perfect, perfect pet. So I called people that I knew that had labs or would consider adopting another lab, and everybody wanted to meet him. So the first house we go to, Rudy walks in the front door and he pees on their couch. Okay. So that was a fluke, right? Well, the second house we go to, he jumps out of the car and he just goes, growls at the kids. And I'm like, okay, this is just not good. Well, the dog had intentionally picked me and decided he was going to stay with me. So we fast forward now to 12 years later. So now Rudy is 14 years old and is a foster failure of mine, like one of my first famous foster failures. And Rudy develops a bleeding ulcer because we switched arthritis medications. And this drove him to such a bad anemic condition that it nearly killed him. And my beloved vet at the time shook his head and looked at me and says, Carla, I don't know what to tell you. He's not going to make it. Take him home if you want to. He cannot digest dog food, so you're going to have to cook for him, and you might buy him a week, but don't count on it. So I carry the Rudy Moose home, and I frantically Google a veterinary nutritionist, who I find. She answers the phone, and hysterically, I'm like, oh, my God, my dog. She says, oh, calm down. This is what you do. She tells me what to cook for him, and I begin this process, and within 10 days, Rudy's better than he'd been in 5 years. He just went from death's door to boing, crazy, crazy, crazy energy. And I'm scratching my head thinking, okay, what's the difference? And, of course, meanwhile, I have three other dogs, and I can't give Rudy stew and give them just their kibble. So I mixed Rudy's concoctions with their food, and in the same amount of time, the enthusiasm at dinner went from being, oh, good, it's dinner time, to like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, what are we having? So this led me to some research into learning about pet food and why it was that my sick old dog could not eat regular dog food but thrived on this. So
I know you describe your dog food on your website as being is home cooking for dogs, and I guess that's where it comes from.
That is what it comes from. And what Rudy Green's doggy cuisine is, and what it, obviously now you know what it evolved from, it is just really basic, all completely human edible ingredients made without any preservatives, without any additives, without any byproducts, fillers, or methods to stabilize and preserve it. We make things like recipe beefy rice, which is diced lean sirloin tips, ground beef, brown rice, and peas and carrots. We cook it to 180 degrees in small batches, which is high enough to kill off all of the pathogens and the microbial growth, but that temperature doesn't destroy fragile nutrients. We then freeze it, and we sell it in resealable containers in frozen in the stores and online. And that way people can use it as a complete meal for a sick dog or an old dog, or simply use a little bit of it as a mix-in to give variety to a regular dry diet.
Hmm. How long have you been doing that now?
Well, I started, Rudy was sick, it was in 2006, and I had the company up and running, and it had it on store shelves by mid-2007. And we have grown very slowly, very methodically, from me doing everything myself to having one or two people help me to now having a couple of production facilities and distribution throughout eight states and online nationally through Amazon.com and Petco.com.
Wow.
We now have six different varieties of the doggy cuisine, and 2 years ago we added a line of all natural as well, soft baked snacks that are sold frozen as well for the same reason, because there are no preservatives in it. That is the natural way to store things and keep them fresh.
Where does your product fall price wise compared to more traditional dog foods?
It is in line with the super premium category. Now, mind you, it's considerably more expensive than a high-quality canned product. But when you look at the quality of the ingredients that you're getting, it's a great value. What we sell is completely human edible, and it's made by hand, and it's made with tender, loving care as well. This is not dog food. This is human food made for dogs. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things too that consumers and pet lovers are really beginning to tire of the hogwash that they've been fed for years about what's in their dog's food. And even if you look at a bag of kibble or a can on the shelf and you see a chicken and you see some carrots and some broccoli and some green beans on the picture on the bag, and you turn it over and you read the label and you can't even pronounce the stuff, much less recognize it. our food has five or six different ingredients in it, and they're all completely recognizable, identifiable as human foods. And they offer, what we offer is the opportunity to add real food to your dog's daily diet. So although this product was designed specifically for a sick old dog and is the perfect answer to that solution when you have somebody who can't eat dog food because of illness or they're in recovery or if they have allergies, this is a great way to reintroduce natural food into a dog's dry diet. And I tell people all the time, if you think about this, variety is the spice of life. And dogs have historically relied on capturing and eating prey, and we're accustomed to variety. Anytime you put the same diet with an unvarying protein source in for humans, dogs, any animal, it leads to allergies and deficiencies in microtrace minerals. And there are no kibble bushes in the wild. You know, so dogs have been eating what was available on the planet, just as humans have, for 10,000 years. And they've been hanging out with us for 10,000 years, eating what we ate and eating our cast-offs. You know, and that was okay. Even up into the 50s, dogs were oftentimes eating our table scraps. And that was okay then because our table scraps were good and clean. We were eating healthier ourselves. We weren't eating fast food and frozen convenience meals and bags of Doritos and Big Macs and things like that. So, yeah, when you think about what we've been told, don't give your dog table scraps, well, yeah, don't give them your leftover fast food. But why would we think for a minute that they should not have real food? Kibble was invented in 1950. The pet food industry did not even produce dry or canned dog food until 1950. It wasn't about. It came about as a way to use the other 50% of the feed animals that we slaughter and use all of those parts we don't consume in a financially profitable and environmentally sound way of using all the refuse on the slaughterhouse floor. But there was no pet food before 1950, and you got to wonder what were they eating? Well, they were eating what we were eating. So it's not I'm not reinventing the wheel here. This is just let's use some common sense. How healthy would you be if you ate nothing but Cheerios every day for every meal?
But you don't encourage people to feed their pets, either dogs or cats or any other animal, I guess, their leftovers from dinner or table scraps, do you? Because it's not just fast food, but it's all the things that we add to the food.
Exactly. It's the salt and the seasonings. And the onions. Then there are a few things.
Yeah, salt and sugar and
absolutely.
And there's some other things that are actually poisonous to.
There are about ten things that are really not good for dogs. And there are, you know, things like it's an easy Google search. It's onions, grapes, raisins, chocolate, soybean, eggplants. It's things like that. So it's a pretty easy list to avoid. But also what you don't want to do, and think about if you were eating healthy for yourself. You lay off the salt, you lay off any added sugars, you lay off any preservatives, you lay off high fats, and boom, and you eat some protein, some grain, and some vegetables, and boom, you've got a great diet. And that's what this is. That's all Rudy Green's doggy cuisine is just clean food.
Sure. Well, it's so hard nowadays, even you know, for our own diets to kind of get away from all that and get away from processed food and everything. I was in a grocery store deli a while back, looking at. In fact, I think it was Costco or something, and I was wanting to buy some sliced fresh roast beef. And they had like six different kinds of you know, deli sliced roast beef there. And so I'm asking what the difference is. He goes, well, all of these are actually processed meats except for one.
Exactly.
So I mean, even when we buy what we think is just pure meat, the slice, it's actually processed to different parts of the cow, I guess, or whatever, and pressed and compressed together so that it looks like roast beef. I mean, that kind of blew my mind.
Exactly. and the preservatives that are put in it to do that way. It's amazing what it brings us back to what kibble and canned food lack. And now when you look at the bag and it says complete and balanced diet, well, if you think about and research how they make dry dog food and how they make canned, the process of dry dog food is called extrusion. And what extrusion is taking rendered proteins and mixing them with grains. And they make it kind of like they make press board. It's at a real high heat and a real intense pressure. That destroys all of the proteins, the amino acids, those fragile trace minerals and vitamins. And the nuggets come out very, very dry, and then they are tossed in an oil coating. Have you ever noticed, like, kibble feels oily, and you wonder, why does something dry feel oily? Pay attention next time and you'll see it. Even the inside of a bag sometimes has like a grease on it. But the oil that they coat and toss the kibble in is what has all the nutrients in it. But, again, bringing us back to why real food's good for dogs, is a sick dog, an old dog, a dog with a compromised immune system, a dog with allergies does not absorb artificial nutrients. So all of those things that are put back in are unnatural and not bioavailable. So there are, aside from the detriment of the production process with pet food, it's very underregulated, and there is not a lot of there's layers of authority, but there's not really a lot of guidelines looking over these things. And one of those things that you look about that is interesting if your readers, listeners are interested in doing a Google search on this, is looking up what rendering is and how the processing for pet food works. Rendering is the process of extracting by melting industrial fats, oils, and separates the fat-soluble ingredients from water-soluble and solid materials. And while that kills most bacterial contaminants, it also destroys all the natural enzymes and proteins that are in it as well. And the pet food industry, would have consumers believe that the rendering plants are full of plump chickens and fresh fish and healthy cows, and that's what you see on the outside of a pet food bag. But this couldn't be less accurate. I mean, rendering persists mostly because it provides a service. It disposes of millions of pounds of dead animals, and that while there is an environmental cause for that, there's not a lot of good ways to dispose of these dead animals, and you can't burn them. But what happens is that 100 million pounds of waste material that's picked up every single day by these rendering companies can include things like heads and feet and stomachs and intestines and restaurant grease and feathers and bones and diseased and dead animals that are rejected from slaughterhouses. And not only that, the cancerous tissue and tumors and any tissues that are in those beings goes in as well. And that alone is bad enough, but pardon me while I go off on the tangent of this, but in addition to just that waste material from the slaughterhouse, 6 to 7 million dogs and cats that are killed every year in animal shelters make their way into rendering vats. And by law, the FDA allows up to 5% of anything called a meat byproduct in a pet food to consist of euthanized, rendered shelter animals. That's a law. So if you see the words meat byproduct on a bag or a can of pet food and it does not cite the source of the animal, meaning if it doesn't say beef byproduct, poultry byproduct, if it just says meat byproduct, that's allowed to have dead dogs and cats that have been killed with phenobarbital in the food. Sometimes even their flea collars stay on. So it's frightening, geez. But true.
Really? Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that really is.
It is crazy. It is crazy. And like I said, it's not something the industry's cloaked in secrecy. And I'm not saying all companies that make pet food are bad. Obviously not. But this is a practice that has been going on and been turned a blind eye to by the FDA, by the Center for Veterinary Medicine, and by the state regulatory bodies called AFCO for years. And you would think that the big pet food recall that happened in 2007 would have made some changes in this, that there would be oversight now, and they would be looking into what some of these subpar ingredients are, and poisonous ingredients that are coming from overseas would be looked at, but they're not.
And, of course, now we have the big class action lawsuit against Beneful.
Exactly. Exactly.
Purina, yeah. Right?
But it took citizens to actually do that because the government is not the government has not pursued it, and frankly, you know, it's kind of a case of the fox watching the hen house. The pet food industry sort of regulates itself, you know, and even you know, you consumers have said, okay, well, my vet says it's okay, you know, if I feed this food, my vet recommends selling this food. You know, even the Veterinarians Association itself are shareholders in some of these big pet food companies. And compounding that problem too, there's very little education, nutritional education in a veterinary curriculum. In 4 years of study, they take like one course in animal nutrition, and that course covers everything. It covers gerbils and birds and guinea pigs and rats and reptiles. So it doesn't give a whole lot of information or a lot of background to them. They have little time and funding just to educate themselves on that. And compounding that problem, those bags that say complete and balanced for all breeds, the fact of the matter is dogs have evolved on the planet, and what is designed most efficient for their digestion and for their health is what was in their environment, and native to the area they came from. What was in their diet there, even 10,000 years ago, still determines what they should be eating now. And one thing I've noticed, even just with my customers, if you have a Labrador Retriever or a Golden Retriever or any kind of a fish water dog, you don't give them enough fish oil or duck fat in their diet, they get dull, shiny coats. You give a cattle dog fish and he throws up. It's a very interesting breed-specific nutrition is a very interesting and up-and-coming area of study. And although it's been around for many, many years, it has not. It's been out of favor by the veterinary associations and obviously by the pet food industry because it would make it much more challenging.
But the whole arena for pet food, though, is getting much broader and bigger now. You know, encompassing companies like yourself and the focus of many different pet food companies now are on a more healthy diet and alternative diet and so forth.
Absolutely, we love our dog.
With some companies, I think it's really a big marketing push and not much else. But there are many others that are very serious about it and really are trying to put forth a much healthier, different type of
absolutely. And you know what? There are some really great resources out there for determining who the good ones are and who they aren't. One of them is a website called Truth About Pet Food. And this woman that started this site many, many, many years ago and is a huge advocate for reform in pet food regulations, and is fighting for transparency in the industry, has a really great database of what the companies really stand for, what they really use, ones that have signed pledges to Origin, and I strongly recommend that Truth About Pet Food is on anybody who really cares about what they're feeding their pet, that they could they could take a visit to that and look at it.
Sure.
And like I said, there's a lot of great resources, a lot of great companies out there. And I'm happy to have survived almost 10 years that I've been in business in a in an industry that it's very hard to break into with a product that requires defying what we've been told for decades and decades, which is don't give your dogs anything but dog food.
Right.
And people are coming around. I mean, we love our pets in this country and want to treat them as best we can, and we care for them and we're concerned about their health. And like I said, consumers are much smarter now. You know, we read labels, and if I don't know about you, if I read something and I can't pronounce it, I go, okay, what is this?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's
sometimes. Sometimes I don't want to know what it is, but yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying. When you see meat byproduct, you don't want to know what it is, but you need to know what it is. We need because nothing will change if we don't have the facts. And there are also some really great, really short definitions. Little shortlist definitions. If just do a quick search for wording on pet food labels, and you'll come up with okay, exactly what is meat meal, and what is a meat byproduct, and what is this and what is that. So it's easy to get the information. It's just not easy to live with the choices that you're faced with once you have the information. It makes it challenging to find products that don't have those ingredients in them, at least in the mass retailers. But that's all changing too. I first started this, there were no freezers and pet food aisles, and now there are. So it's coming around.
That's true. Even in Safeway now, they have a refrigerator, freezer, or whatever with dog food in it,
with
and
fresh
cat
pet.
Food in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I never paid attention to what the brand was, but I just remember seeing them because I wasn't buying it. But yeah, I mean, it's out there everywhere, and you're really a part of it as well. And I appreciate you coming on and telling us about it. Now, so where do people, again, find your product, and can someone from anywhere in the United States buy your product?
Absolutely. Our website is rudygreens.com, and by visiting our website, you can peruse all of our product offerings, and then you have the option to either click buy it on Amazon or buy it on petco.com, and it will be the shipping is included in the cost, and it will be shipped in a cooler, gel-packed, and second day aired to your door, and your dogs will thank you greatly for it. Just make sure they don't have your password, because otherwise they'll be shopping all the time.
Yes.
But also, just as a side note, you know, the company was founded on you know, my passion for dogs. I've been a rescue worker for 30 years and have served. I've done everything from cleaning kennels and cages to fostering hundreds of dogs to serving on boards of directors for animal rescue groups. Run the gamut. I live and breathe dogs. And our company was founded to help those dogs that are, you know, that are not as fortunate as our customers' dogs are. And 5% of our sales go to shelters in every market. Not of our profits.
Carla, you are the real deal for sure. And
thank you.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. And your website is rudygreens.com. Is that right?
Yes, sir. RudyGrens. Thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate you having me on the show. And,
you bet. We'll have to have you back again sometime when you're when you've become the dog food mogul of the country.
There you go. When I'm the Martha Stewart of the dog world, there you go.
Taking over the dog world, yes.
One step at a time. Thank you so much.
You bet. And don't go away, folks. We're going to take a quick break here before we continue. So don't go away.